Checking in again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talks. Hey, Tacky, how are you today?
Hey, not too bad, Joe. Good morning on this wonderful Wednesday.
I know, it doesn't feel like it, though. Still feels like March.
Yes, it's been a lot cooler than we all expected this time of year. And you can see everything's taking a little bit longer to bloom. But it's supposed to be warmer weather around the corner quickly. And I hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day. A very early Mother's Day this year. We're heading towards a summer. So typical New England, we get the 10-minute spring, and before you know it, we're going to cook.
So true. Yeah. Just wait a minute, it'll change. Did you go to Cleaner Greener Quincy this year back on Saturday?
I did not make it to Cleaner Greener this year. I actually went to an Eagle Scout ceremony in Howes Neck, which was great. I do enjoy Eagle Scout ceremonies and see what they're doing. And, had to take care of some home things that morning that just took a little extra time. So unfortunately, I didn't get out to do that this Saturday, but it's also windy as all get out. So I hope everyone that was out there was not blown into the ocean to see it cleaner, greener, picking up stuff around my house because, litter gets around. I'm fairly confident some of the litter was not the neighbor's litter. I think it blew across the marsh.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. It was a cleaner, windier. For sure. Now, Senior Olympics are back this year. First time in a couple of years. So that's kind of nice.
It is. We are reaching some form of normality. But again, the B2, BA2 variant of Omicron is spreading like wildfire. I've known more people that have gotten positive test results, and I've gotten more close contact calls than I would enjoy. So obviously, rapid test kits are available. They're reimbursed by insurance. A number of places may still have free test kits available. I believe QCAP on the first floor of their office, was still promoting. They still have some, but I suspect these free test kits are not going to be available much longer given how many people got close contact and into a temporary quarantine while waiting for results. So yeah, it's great to see Olympics is back. Everyone's should be taking proper precautions, particularly more vulnerable populations. But we do have to come back to some semblance of learning how to live with this and just being smart about how going about it.
Yeah, I mean, do you anticipate any reimposed restrictions? Attendance limitations, mask requirements, things like that?
I don't anticipate that unless this becomes a much more virulent strain that really just bypasses the vaccine's ability to mitigate the symptoms. Reality is this, if you have severe underlying conditions or you have immune compromise issues and you're vaccinated, it's still not great. Let's be honest about it. I mean, it's still not great. It's not as good as being a healthy individual that's a bit younger than both of us that is vaccinated, who has a stronger immune system. So again, it's no youth and age is no guarantee that the Omicron or any COVID variant will kill you. I'm not saying that, but I'm always saying it's a risk assessment issue. How much odds are on you getting severely ill, unvaccinated, or perhaps dying unvaccinated versus someone vaccinated who could get severely ill or dying because you're vaccinated? The studies have shown that for the most part, people who are vaccinated have a lower level of death and a lower level of severe illness. I say again, back at the very beginning, my hope was that the vaccines would stop the spread, meaning that if you're vaccinated and COVID got to you, it would stop with you. You wouldn't continue to spread the COVID. Unfortunately, that is not the case. You can still be vaccinated, test positive, have no symptoms or essentially have a really bad cold and find yourself still giving it to other folks. And that's what makes COVID pretty scary because of the level of spread rate. And, but again, I encourage people, to get vaccinated. If you're eligible for booster, get boosted. Have test kits ready on hand. And please be responsible if you're not feeling well. Don't give other people what you got. But, we're closing at 70%+. We're 70%+. Two-dose vaccination. I know booster rates are still much lower, they're under 30%. But again, it's an older population that gets the boosters pursuing the CDC guidelines. And that high level of vaccination is not creating herd immunity, but it is reducing the spread rate and the hospitalization and death rate. So I don't see us going to any kind of limitations or shutdowns or limitations of closures or travel restrictions unless the virus is able to evade the vaccine's antibody. Basically, you'll put antibodies that the vaccines create, and you have a surge in hospitalization and death. So I'll tell you, if you start looking at, you know, over 200 deaths a day regularly, and hospitals are looking at, you know, 92% capacity and ICUs at 95% capacity, you know, extreme measures probably will have to be taken. But, you know, if it doesn't get to that point, you know, I think we're just going to try to live with it. But watch the death count and the ICU. Those are really key. People ask me that all the time. Like, it's really a tolerance of how much death we're going to accept as a society on COVID.
The case numbers now are almost null and void because home tests, you know, by a large part, don't get reported.
Yeah, this is a global problem, not just here. If you got a home test and you test positive twice, you know, stay home. It's pretty self-explanatory. If you got mixed results, one negative, one positive, go get the PCR. And if you got two tests that can't figure out what it's trying to tell you because the blue and red lines don't seem to sync properly, definitely get the PCR test.
Yeah.
And, you know, the PCR test you get the pharmacy or the doctor's office gets reported to DPH. Your home test doesn't. So in all likelihood, on a global level, because there's so many home tests available now, it's underreporting mm-hmm. of people with COVID. And, you know, as my friends remind me who have kids, the school systems are probably underreporting too, because you have one kid test positive COVID PCR test, so you have another child or more than one child at your home. Now everyone's in quarantine, you home test them all, they'll all come up positive. There's no point for the PCR because you already confirmed one kid is positive. So why do you need to do another PCR test on the remaining kids?
Yeah, you don't. Just everybody's positive at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So those other kids that report positive, you know, on a home test are not going to have be sent to DPH unless you call in that information to your local board of public, the local board of health.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, people aren't doing that.
No.
So, yeah, you all should know that the positive test rate is likely lower than what you see on television because people aren't reporting at home. And not just here, but I mean, in Europe and mm-hmm. Asia and Australia, Japan and Korea, I mean, all places that have home test capability. You know, unless people are super diligent, I just see that it's unaccounting.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Curious, what do they, are there home tests available in China? Do you know, Jackie?
Well, they do make them in China, so.
Yeah, but do they sell them there?
That I can't tell you. Yeah. I think some of you watch some of the Reuters News or AP or you know, any world news program, you know, have seen these massive lines of testings at Shanghai and Beijing and half a dozen other big cities. I mean, to them, a small city is 3 million people. So, you know, these are very large population centers, and you know that they don't do that. I think a big reason is government reporting.
Mm-hmm.
The government wants to collect all the data so they have a clean and clear picture about what the COVID rate is. As to home tests, which again, you don't, no one's going to call Lord Public Health from the Bureau to do that. So, you know, a place like China, actually, it's down to China. Actually, nobody else does this at this point. It's only China, you know, does want government run testing strictly so they can have a clear picture of the data sets, especially residential complexes. Some of you may notice that they live vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people living vertically together, which, of course, you know, increases the odds of the spread rate.
Right.
So, you know, the government knows, you know, which buildings have infected folks. I mean, it gives them ability to target quarantine or target COVID zero targeting. So they'll just shut down, you know, residential complexes as opposed to trying to shut a whole city down. But
yeah,
given how Omicron moves, BA2 moves and BA3 and 4 and 5, I think this is 4 and 5 is the more virulent ones coming out of South Africa. COVID zero tolerance is going to be much, much harder to continue. I wasn't surprised by the original Wuhan type shutdown way at the beginning because you didn't know what you were dealing with, because none of us knew what we were dealing with.
Right.
now we do know what we're dealing with. And to maintain that ability to try to, like, you know, shut everyone in for 2 weeks and wait it out, it's not going to work. And if a BA4 and 5 does become a dominant strain, which we don't know still, I mean, it may not get as far. Because, again, vaccinations, people who already had it before has more resistance to it, may have harder time latching on to hosts in places that have higher vaccination and have had infections.
Yeah.
Places like China, where they have a vaccine which is not as effective against Omicron variants, and densely populated, very close living quarters, like very close living quarters, you know, the spread rate will be much higher. This thing's past chickenpox in terms of spread capacity.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is, until there's world herd immunity, if ever, it's going to be with us in some form.
Yes. A variant will continue to appear as long as it has the ability to manifest itself in a human being to mutate through constant division. In countries that are willing to share their technology in terms of selling and providing vaccines, antiviral medication, and I'm sure there'll be over-the-counter targeted drugs for COVID down the road, sharing test kits, sharing technology and studies on a global level, you know, that gives us the ability to try to get ahead of it. And areas of the world that doesn't have a high level of healthcare and science sophistication, which, you know, parts of part of South America, you know, parts of Africa, you know, some like remote islands in the South Pacific, you know, parts of Central Asia, you know, those are places that have very low vaccination rate, very low testing capacity, not large, robust healthcare and science systems. That's where you're going to find variants coming out of.
Right. Yep. Can we talk a little bit about something more closer to home, Jackie? The governor came to Quincy last week and said we're getting a new courthouse.
Yeah, this is a bit of a long time coming conversation. Unfortunately, I had a conflict and I was able to get to that press conference. We've been talking about this for several years now about a new courthouse, and the state's courthouses are in tough shape overall. I mean, some of these courthouses are close to 75 or maybe even older. Quincy District, it's not that old. It's a 70s construction courthouse, but it's capacity issue. Quincy District Court is the most busy courthouse in Norfolk County. It actually is one of the top five. Morrissey can tell you better. DA can tell you better. But I believe it's like a top five activity courthouse. So having a new courthouse that is larger and more spacious and has more rooms and more capacity to deal with folks coming through, you know, be very helpful and important. And also keeping it in the Quincy Center area is crucial because it's part of a moving economy. The courthouse is an economic engine because of its employees and people doing business there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's on, you know, close to public transportation as well. So that I'm sure is a consideration. It's interesting that the Superior Court is part of the plan too.
Well, moving Superior Court from Dedham to Quincy, you know, gives them some consolidation. Mm. It's a little odd because, you know, Dedham historically is considered the seat of county power.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, the governor's mansion is in Dedham.
Yes, it's the Endicott Estate.
Yeah, which nobody uses. It's really a museum, right? We're one of the few states that doesn't have a governor's mansion, believe it or not. Most states have governor's mansions that governors live in, not here. So, you know, the seat of county power, and, you know, depending which Dedham person you talk to, the seat of state power is in Dedham. Now, moving into Quincy, you know, which is more densely populated area, you know, again, public transportation, you know, close to three major road systems. You know, there's some sense in that point as well in doing that. So, but this is going to take some time to put together. So I wouldn't quite flee the Superior Courthouse just yet in Dedham. But, you know, it's going to take some time, but we'll get together. Again, it's continuation of the governor's final year on bonding. This guy likes to borrow a lot of money in his final term to get these, you know, capital projects moving, very important capital projects moving. So we have this, we have the MBTA garage, no construction going on. Has anyone seen this? A lot of projects going on in downtown Quincy. So, you know, a lot of state money is flowing into the city to create jobs and long-term economic benefits.
No question, yeah. The so the budget process, where does that stand now, Tacky?
Senate Ways and Means released their budget this week, actually yesterday, which means senators have 2 weeks in to get their amendments in, and the Senate should be going to debate perhaps next week. I don't know what the Senate schedule is yet, because they generally announce the schedule. I believe they should announce it, let's say today's Wednesday, tomorrow's Thursday, generally have a session Thursday. So the schedule is probably going to be announced sometime later today to the senators. So I'm not privy, obviously I'm not privy to what the senators are doing unless they tell me something.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I mean, it should be next week, you know, some point next week that the Senate will go into budget debate, and then, you know, we'll have a very quickly formed conference committee by Memorial Day, and hopefully we'll have a budget, you know, on the governor's desk by the end of June. That's the objective.
Very good. And I'm sure they're hoping you don't need a supplemental budget. Hopefully get this one done and finalized.
Yeah, we hope. I don't know what else to tell people, but we hope we can get to it. I've been around too long. I remember days of Birmingham and Finneran going back in time where we didn't have a budget till October. And, you know, during COVID was the first time we didn't have a budget until December because it was so unclear about where we were in 2020, about whether where everything was happening, and we were banking on a federal assistance on balancing our budget, which actually did happen that wintertime,
yep,
which allowed us flexibility of forming the FY21 budget. So, you know, I've been around for several different budget situations between staffing and being elected. And every time it appears, it's all unusual and a surprise. So hopefully this will be more conventional and dull, the budget process. But we also pointed out that there is a surplus. It's no secret that this fiscal cycle's revenues from April have been very strong. We'll see how May comes up. Obviously, this is corporate taxes, estimated taxes, and other taxes coming in the month of May. That will provide data for the conference committee in June about better projections for FY23. We tend to be very conservative in our projections. We're better off having a surplus than a deficit, obviously. The conference committee will look at the final numbers coming out of May, and then they'll make appropriate adjustments in the conference committee regarding final revenue numbers. But, you know, this is an unusual time period, and I don't expect it to last forever. As we've seen the stock market plunge, the feds have increased interest rates to slow down inflation. So what does it mean to us? Well, it means that capital gains is not going to be good in FY23. So, you know, conference committee is going to have to kind of readjust the capital gains numbers. Unless, then again, maybe the market booms in October and our projections down on capital gains because of what's going on right now may not be relevant. This is the problem, right?
All speculation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, we're taking our best best understanding estimates. So, and you know, we all know there's a housing market shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates are going up. It's going to be slowed down on home sales, which also equals slowed down capital gains.
Yeah, it's already having an impact. Home prices are coming down slightly as interest rates rise. Sales are slowing, but as you pointed out, the supply is still very limited, so that's going to drive demand.
Yeah, the low volume of housing available within the greater Boston area is not going to drive. It's going to keep prices artificially higher, despite high interest rates or higher interest rates. I say artificially because the people aren't going to be rushing to bring down prices because of interest rate hikes. Other less densely populated areas, you know, the market will definitely bring down housing prices, particularly less densely areas.
Right.
Populated areas, but we're so densely populated here, you know, the market force is a little bit different. And what normally would occur, you know, on a price decline, because people aren't going to be inclined to buy homes because of the interest rate. I don't see that happening here. I just don't. I think the shortage of homes available to buy will be off will offset the interest rates.
I think, yeah, it'll keep the bubble inflated, as they say, right? It's still the bubble, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a lesson again that not everywhere is the same. And housing in particular. So every different region, every different part of the country, will feel housing impacts differently, well as increased interest rates. I still believe that there'll be a lot more retirements coming this summertime among folks. I still do. If you had a 401k that's actually doubled in 2021, I mean, you recovered all your losses from 2008 at that stage. You most likely either took your money out or you moved everything to safer harbors of preparing to sell your home at a higher value and take advantage of the fact that your retirement investments had boomed in the last year. The market's down now. For those people who went to safe harbors preparing for retirement, should be in okay shape. In it for the long haul, people like myself, it's like the fourth time we've had this kind of dip, so you just kind of
You
with
just
it.
ride the wave again. Yeah, exactly.
You just ride the wave. So, but I'm expecting more workforce shortages this summertime. People like to take their retirement for obvious reasons when the weather is warmer.
Sure. I have to ask again because it's become a political football again, Jackie, is the gas tax. And have you changed your opinion on that?
No, not really. It's been quiet again as Quincy gas prices have gone to $4.29. 10 days ago, it was $3.95. So, to be honest with you, none of what no one would have noticed us taking off the gas tax at all, to be honest with you, because people only see the rise and fall. No one asks about what the components are. And another interesting thing about the gas tax is the way it's set up. People have this misconception the gas tax is a charge to the gas station. Meaning the gas station collects the gas tax and gives it to the state. That's not true. Gas tax is baked into the price of gas when it comes into the Commonwealth. So it's like alcohol. The excise taxes, the federal government and the state government puts an excise tax on alcohol, is baked into the price of alcohol as soon as it crosses in the state lines. And when the gas station buys that gas to sell to you, they can't return that gas.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty simple.
They own it at that point, yeah.
They own it. At least in alcohol, they can actually stop getting alcohol. And I'm aware of the fact that people, the wholesalers have to dispose of alcohol that's unused on the shelves, and there's a whole buyback component, as we saw during COVID, with the restaurants, because a lot of alcohol sales are pre-ordered and prepaid for, stopped, and refunds were being given, and all kinds of transactions, as you can imagine, thousands of transactions during COVID, a high COVID in 2020 with the restaurant industry and the wholesalers, and wholesalers back to manufacturers. Excise taxes kind of like started vanishing as things started going away from Massachusetts in some ways. Gas is not the same thing because we gas tax the transporter of the gas, which is the manufacturer. I mean, Shell, Shell's the gas. So, I mean, we're taxing Shell, but the gas price is also set by Shell. As part of the, as you point out, the speculative market a little bit, the speculation of fuel, energy. So, you take the gas tax off, there's no guarantee you're going to see that reduction at the pump at all. And I think states have done that. Excuse me, states have done that. I'm going to tell you, they're not going to see any relief. The businesses have no incentive to give you that 24 cent reduction or whatever cent reduction depending on the state you're in, 24 cent reduction per gallon. Why would they? You're just going to leave the 24 cent in place, collect the profits. We lose out on gas tax, and so what? Because you never noticed anyway. In the end, they don't get blamed, that we get blamed. I still have concerns about kicking the can down the road. I mean, if you're a bondholder, you're holding my debt, and I tell you that, of every item I sell in my store, I'll give you 10 cents of every dollar to pay my debt. And you go, okay, that's great. And then suddenly, someone, hands me, some money. Let's say it's like $100 or $1,000, whatever. And I go to you, the debt holder, hey, I'm going to keep paying my debt, but I'm going to reduce my prices. And you'd be like, okay, that's great. So you're going to raise your prices again when you run out of this extra money. Well, sure. But then the customers come in the door and they like the fact they get they're paying less. Won't come back unless you keep the prices down. So now, you know, you hold my debt and you're looking at me like you trust me enough that I'm going to defy my customers and raise my prices back up to pay my debt. I'm
Yes.
good. The answer is no.
Yeah. Are the bonds secured with anything else or any real property?
Well, the bonds are cash driven.
Okay.
The bonds are secured against against the ability to generate revenue. For example, the MBTA actually had a very high bond rating because they leveraged the fares.
Right. Okay.
Fares are always very consistent. The ridership is flat in the sense that there's no more capacity. Bond holders know exactly what you're going to get. Same thing with the Turnpike. When we, you know, the Turnpike was around, those all their capital projects on the roads was bonded against the fares. And then, you know, the Big Dig was bonded against the tolls, as well as the security of the $200 million in the trust fund as security. But you know, in the Commonwealth, I mean, you know, the bondholders like to have consistency and trust. And frankly, does you know, if you're holding debt of the state, do you trust lawmakers to defy their voters? No, you don't, because we're elected officials. So when you look at it from that point of view, you know, do you really trust the government to say they're going to raise taxes? Yeah,
No.
think about that, everybody, for a second. If you're holding government debt and we're lowering taxes, do you trust us to say we're going to raise them again? That's paying the millions and millions of dollars that you're giving us at a good interest rate. So obviously, interest rates are tied to risk. So if there's a higher risk that a bonder may have, they're going to charge us a higher interest rate. So sure, we could do this. But I mean, if you're a debt holder of the Commonwealth, holding Commonwealth debt, you're just like, ooh, okay. Then a poll number comes out. Yeah, we love this low taxes at like 75, 80% poll rating. And if you're a debt holder, you're looking at that, well, can't trust these guys. Let's double our interest rate on them.
Or not lend to them again.
Yeah. So it's a little, I think it's a little more complicated. The bondholders, you know, have issued a statement. So it doesn't affect us if you change the gas tax. Sure, it doesn't, because they're still collecting debt. They're going to demand the debt collection somehow.
Right. There's that's already a done deal.
Question is, you know, future new debt, you know, are they going to offer us a good deal or not? And the answer is why would they if they can't trust us to raise taxes to pay the debt?
It's directly it's like getting a mortgage. It's directly related to risk.
Short answer is they don't trust us to raise taxes to pay debt. And I, if you're watching this, do you trust us to pay your debt by raising taxes if you're next on the line? I'm going to tell you the answer is no.
Well, no, because you're elected by the people. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of some degree of I refer to, I consider common sense politics. That's kind of that. I mean, it sounds simple when I say it, but to me, this is like common sense politics.
It's just interesting. It's gone to the national level now in the Senate race in New Hampshire. I'm sure you've seen the ads for Maggie Hassan. So it's interesting to see the parties going against each other.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, it's an election cycle, and people will do what they do for the election cycle. And you already know the outcome before you begin, but people like the idea you're fighting for an outcome that may not arise.
Hey, speaking of the MBTA, did you see the feds are coming? The feds are coming.
Oh, I can't say I was predicting this one. I certainly did not predict this one. But I think it makes sense now that you see them showing. It starts to make some sense because of all the things that happened to Teal in the course of the last 3 or 4 years, regarding number of fatalities and injuries from folks using the T stations and or the T itself, depending on the escalator or the train or the train doors or any number of other tragedies.
Yep,
That
so some road crossings, there've been some bad accidents, yeah.
some really bad accidents, very scary and tragic. So, you know, having the feds come poke around may not be the worst thing to do. You know, a lot of it's procedures and protocols, a lot of it's old technology. I don't have to tell anybody listening about OT technology, and new technology is expensive. And again, as I was talking about earlier, I mean, the bonding is tied to the fare system. You know, if there's steady fares and the fares are a right rate, then, you know, they're going to get good bond rates, you know, the ability to upgrade to T. And of course, you know, we do have some of that federal infrastructure money that's coming, and we're going to bond some more money this cycle to provide the 10-20% share for us to get the federal money. Some of it will go into the MBTA systems infrastructure. But I mean, it's a lot of infrastructures, I think everybody's seen. And everyone keeps wanting to grow the infrastructure, which is actually also part of the problem. It's right. The T is never contracted. It keeps expanding in terms of distance. While we've contracted some bus lines, we've reorganized some schedules in different parts of the T to create more efficiency. In terms of like physical size, mm-hmm. You know, it keeps going out of Boston. So, we've always, the delegation, you know, for the most part, always said the same thing. Why we keep growing when we can't maintain what we have?
Yeah, this goes back to the Patrick administration, as I recall, and probably before that.
It goes back to Bill Weld. I mean, we're talking about the 30-year problem here. And, you know, and the commuter rail lines don't help. They're underutilized, you know, hundreds and hundreds of $1 million investment. And then you also have Southeast Rail from New Bedford to Boston, which again will cost you probably close to $500 million over the course of a decade to build. But I mean, you got to recoup your investment. And while the T is subsidized at an enormous amount, I mean, the fare prices does not reflect market prices, and the ride program absolutely does not reflect market prices. I mean, the price of a ride is not even a tank of gas,
right?
Or a gallon of gas. So, you know, the program is heavily subsidized, but you still got to make some money back. And again, the fares, you know, the bond guys like to see your fares as steady income. So, you know, I'm not blaming any particular administration or any specific general manager, but you all know who used the T and CDT is an aging system. It's bound to be some failures, and the cost of maintaining the system is expensive. And having, I think, an outside investigator look at the system and probably identify, I think they're going to identify both systematic mechanical issues, and they're probably going to identify some of the procedural issues. Mm-hmm. The lack of consistent management at the T creates some patchworks in protocols because nobody stays there more than 2 or 3 years. If you're lucky, 3 years, and it's upper management, they're just all gone. So, you know, maybe they'll be helpful on seeing how that, on seeing how, you know, they make improvement. I would suspect you're going to see what we've already known for a lot of time. Long time to hear about the lack of consistent management over long periods to create some stability.
Yeah, it's like even any private corporation, if management turns over frequently, that has an impact on the bottom line.
Well, HP is one of those companies. They had a lot of CEO turnovers in the late 90s, actually in the early, sorry, the mid 2000s into the early 2010s. And it's another company that had a lot of problems, constantly shifting around CEOs and CFOs and COOs and other folks. And I mean, the company was not very valuable. As a kind of continued forward. It's still around, but it's one of those ones that, you know, does a lot of hardware, which, you know, computer will do like physical hardware. Your profit margins aren't that great.
Right. Yep.
But, you know, constantly changing executives, you know, was a sign that this business had a problem.
Yeah. It is May. We talked a little bit last week, Jackie, about AAPI month. But I know, was it last year or the year before that you actually went out with the House Speaker here in Quincy and visited some Asian-owned businesses?
Yeah, last year we did that with the Speaker, visited some local businesses near his home, actually, because we were in Quincy Point visiting a couple of spots, talking to business owners and yeah, catching up with folks. And, you know, we encourage, again, like other months for ethnic groups, to shop local, shop AIP-owned or, you know, majority-employed businesses in your community. And we're challenging folks, again, to do a social media campaign to encourage folks to visit places that you visited, or perhaps you visit for the first time to try it. And if you enjoy it, you know, tell others. And it's a great way to help the AIP community nationally as well as locally. You know, still the hardest hit of all COVID, because, you know, we took the hit starting in January before COVID was COVID back in 2020.
Yeah.
Because of already fear mongering about the virus. And of course, it elevated higher in 2020 with President Trump basically, you know, casting dispersions on one racial group as being disease carriers. So as a result, you know, has been a long impact of racial, negative racial violence and slurs and so forth for some time. And we look in New York City, this hasn't really slowed down in terms of violent attacks on folks that have done nothing but just stand there. But, you know, the businesses themselves are still recovering. Sadly, like all businesses, you know, we lost some, but you know, others are still trying to struggle to move forward. So, you know, if you know you have a business you like, you want to, you know, promote it to others, you know, we strongly encourage you to do so.
Yeah, I mean, you're directly benefiting your own local community when you do that, because these folks are living and working in your community, so you're having a direct impact on them.
Absolutely, yeah. Local businesses are still your biggest employers. So, excuse me. So, I mean, local businesses are still the backbone of our economy and local employment. So, you know, Quincy obviously has a very high minority population now, and you see a lot of Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, Indian, and many halal, many other businesses in the city. And, you know, some people live in the city, some people don't own those businesses. But a lot of the folks that work in those businesses live in Quincy or live in the geographic zone.
Yep.
So, you know, support those businesses, support local jobs. And, you know, given how everything's going, and I know inflation's high and it affects all of us. But, I mean, you have the means to do so. You know, give them a little bit of extra helping hand in this month of May and let other people know about the good works they do.
Yep.
It'll be very important.
Yeah, and I do want to mention, too, I just learned yesterday from the director of the Thomas Crane Public Library that they have launched a brand new Asian e-books service. So you can actually go on the library's website and take out Asian books written in Asian. She called it Simple Chinese. So it's...
Yeah. So they have started picking up simplified Chinese novels and books. For those who don't know, there's basically two types of written Chinese language. It's a little bit unusual for a country to have one type of written language. It's largely driven by the Communist Revolution. Hmm. So you have what's simplified Chinese, which is the currently used Chinese written language in China that's established by and recognized by the current government. And you have what's considered classical or traditional Chinese, which is used for countries and regions that are not part of the Chinese government, such as Singapore, such as Taiwan, okay. Such as most Chinese schools in the United States and Canada and England and other places, you know, teach classical Chinese, but university level now, and even now high school level, are using the Chinese government recognized Chinese, which is simplified.
I see.
It is the dominant written version of the language now. And the difference is very, it's not very obvious unless you look at it. The number of strokes per character is reduced in simplified Chinese.
Oh, okay.
So modern Chinese has less strokes. It's supposed to help it easier people remember the number of strokes to write or draw, because it's all symbolic, a symbol. It's a language based on symbols. So it reduces the number, so it makes it easier for people to remember how many strokes, as opposed to classical, where, you know, there may be up to 25 to 30% more strokes in that same symbol. So it was designed to actually improve literacy rates in China by making it a little bit more simple for people to remember the number of strokes.
But, okay. So anyway, it's a free service for Quincy residents, and for non-Quincy residents, it's very easy to get an e-library card, and anybody can use it at that point.
Yeah, I, you know, encourage everybody to definitely do that. And my understanding is the director of the library, Megan Allen, is retiring next week.
Yes, the end of May, she's retiring after 36 years of service, and about 9 as the director.
Oh, wow. So, congratulations to Megan, on her retirement. And that's a lot of years of service. I'm not quite there yet.
No, you're just a young and tacky. Good point to let folks know how to get a hold of you.
617-722-2037. I'm stuck. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. It's a new phone number. So all my previous podcast numbers are no longer being used on this number. We got a phone number change. Again, the sales is open. We're in room 42. We encourage people to please call us before you come. We are practicing contact tracing in my office regarding COVID. So we do like to know if you're going to show up. If you do, please let us know where to find you in case, God forbid, something happens. Obviously, State Representative Tacky Chan, Facebook. Continue to post useful information. We're going to post a few pictures of me using some local businesses. For example, I shop AIP Month. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, TACKEY.CHAN at mahouse.gov. Still my email. I still sort through it. I still read it. It's a lot of email, but I do go through it. And obviously, I have a Twitter account at Tacky Chan, as well as TackyChan.org. Some more information resources through social media that you may find helpful. And of course, me and Joe here are trying to do this as often as possible on KBA TV, providing some insights and how many flubs I can make on cable access television.
Oh no, we edit those out, Tacky. Nobody will ever see them except me. Kidding, we don't edit at all, actually. So, so you're on your own.
This unplugged thing will be the end of me.
Well, we appreciate you here. We really do. It's great to keep this line of communication open. So thank you.
No, it's always good to see you, and we'll catch you in a week's time or so as we try to schedule these. Yeah, it's getting a little busier, so scheduling, I think, is a little tougher. But no, we always make this work the best we can.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks again. Be well.
Thank you. You too. Be well.